I'm so excited to have my next guest in studio. We continue our special show for the Printers Row Lit Fest, which is this weekend. My next guest is Chicago Treasure, even though she doesn't live here anymore. Samantha Irby just put out her latest book of essays called We Are Never Meeting in Real Life. It's the highly anticipated follow-up to her book, Meaty. We're Never Meeting in Real Life, debuted this week on the New York Times bestseller list at number 7.
It's amazing.
It was surprising.
Yeah. Oh, I knew this was going to be a bad decision. As soon as I saw your name on the sheet, I was like,
Uh-oh. The essays talk about her childhood, her family, her health, her love and sex life. It's an intimate portrayal of the life of Samantha Irby. Irby, well known in Chicago for her performances at literary events all over town. The Trib once called her the most talented, inappropriate woman in Chicago. And I'd go further to say one of the funniest people I've ever seen perform on stage. And she's not just on stage. Her blog, Bitches Gotta Eat, is wildly popular. Irby will be part of the panel tomorrow, which will include my next guest, Scotchy Cole, and others. It's at 10:30 at Jones High School Auditorium in the South Loop, and it is sold out.
It's pretty amazing. I mean, I want people to show up and, like, beat on the doors and try to get in.
My guest, Samantha Irby. Good to see you.
It's good to see you.
We go back. It's been a couple years since we've seen each other, but
by choice.
Yeah. Yeah. I ran you out of town. It wasn't big enough for the both of us.
That's right. Right. That's right. You get to keep Chicago. I will dominate Kalamazoo, which is where I live now.
So, I mean, this is, like I said, a highly anticipated follow-up to Meaty. You mm-hmm. have had a tremendous, tremendous amount of success with your books. Mm-hmm. You know, as you start the tour. You know, people start asking you questions about all the intimate details that are in your life, I mean, do you start to sweat? I mean, are you sort of like, maybe I shouldn't have told everybody about, you know, the first time I saw a penis?
Well, I'm sweating now, just so everyone can have, like, a sensory experience along with this. No, I don't ever regret, especially with this, like, this was with a big publisher and, like, a team of people goes over the book, like you have an editor.
Really?
And then a copy editor. And then, like, lawyers have to read it so you can't get sued for, like, talking about your ex-boyfriend or whatever. And by the time that many, like, faceless people in New York City have combed through the book, I feel pretty good about other people reading it.
Well, I mean, you've always, you've been able to blog and put stories out there and also put stuff on stage. Since moving to Michigan, do you still have that opportunity to do the same things that you did in Chicago when you were putting media out?
No. So there is no, like, live lit scene in Kalamazoo. Maybe I'll start one. But I had kind of stopped performing before I left because there were so many shows. I was getting a little burned out, but also there are only so many times before everyone's like, okay.
All right.
The market was getting saturated, right, if you will, with Samantha Irby. So I had pulled back from that and I'm still enjoying the break. It's good.
Really?
I did You're Being Ridiculous the other night at Steppenwolf, and that was good. And I was like, boy, I really do love telling, like, a room full of shocked people in cardigans, like, disgusting stories. But it also, like, now we, like, live in an age where everyone's taking your picture all the time. And I have been confronted with a lot of really horrifying pictures of myself. So that's a big deterrent. You know, it's really
hard on stage, like people, like, they tag you saying, like, I love Samantha Irby, and you just freak out because you don't like the picture.
Yeah. I don't know I do not have the level of comfort with my, like, contorted performance face. Like, there's a lot of people looking in here right now, and I'm like, all of them are taking my picture, staring at me. But, like, once you've seen yourself, like, photographed from underneath, like, if you're on a stage, you know that feeling. You're on stage when someone's, like, taking your picture and you're like, man, that is an awful, awful view of myself. It's really easy to sort of take a break from that.
I mean, the contrast to what you're telling people on stage about your life and the intimate details, for you to shy away from doing that because of the fact that someone's going to take your picture, you can understand why I'd be like, huh.
Well, it would, like, if they recorded me, that would be okay. You know, right. If it was like, if people were like, listen to this MP3 of this hilarious story. But when people are like, hey, you want to hear a really funny thing and stare at this person's, like, jowls? I'm like, nah, man, no. It's time to take a break.
Well, that's everybody's
do
loss.
Every show that's in a turtleneck. If venues would have air conditioning, I would do all their shows, because then I could wear like a winter coat.
You're at the point now where you can make those requests.
Incorrect. Maybe I haven't tried it yet. I don't want to be that person who's like demanding things.
Air conditioning?
Yeah. I don't want people to
hate
me.
It's a very small kind of thing to demand. It's not like you're going with weird M&Ms in the break room.
I know. Every time I had a book reading last night, and Sarah from Women and Children First was like, what do you want in the dressing room? And I was like, water? Like, nothing? I don't know. Like, I'm not 2 Chainz or whatever. Like, I don't need a whole lot.
I can't wait.
Like, what is a person who writes, like, butt stories ask for? Oh my god, I could think of so many things, but yeah, like right, probably right, not right. Good for the radio. But really, what am I gonna say?
What are you gonna say? Samantha Irby, the author of We Are Never Meeting in Real Life, in studio tonight. She's gonna be at the Lit Fest tomorrow morning at Jones High School, the auditorium in the South Loop. It's sold out, so yeah. Go stand outside and slam on the doors.
Yeah.
Say you demand to be let in to see Samantha Irby. We'll take a quick break here. We'll come back. More Samantha Irby in studio tonight. Stay with us. In studio with me, Samantha Irby, the author of We Are Never Meeting in Real Life, a brand new book that just came out this week. It's on the New York Times bestseller list. She's in for Printer's Row Lit Fest. She's got an event tomorrow morning. It's already sold out. I have to say, it's great to see you, and it's great to have you back in Chicago, because as I said in the beginning, I consider you to be one of the funniest people I know.
Thank you.
And, you know, the beauty of the book, and when I read your essays, this and Meaty, it translates. And so many times, you'll have writers who get up on stage and are able to, you know, embody a certain style and make people die laughing. And then when they put it to the page in essays, you're like, meh.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a time, I mean, the passage you were talking about when, you know, unfortunately a chair broke that you were sitting on, and you explain the thought process and emotion that goes through somebody when that happens. I spit my Coke up today. Like, I mean, it translates.
You just
read
it today?
That part
today.
That's
very good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But my point being that, like, it translates. I mean, how important is it for you to take that same energy that you've been able to really harness on stage and in your blog and be able to make that transition into a book form?
I think because I write it exactly as I, like, think it and feel it. And I have been lucky to have, like, editors who don't make me, like, change it or make it sound sort of fancy. Like, the chair part, I really did. I mean, first, I was like, can I use the broken leg of this chair to cut my wrist open the long way? But immediately after that, I sort of went through the five
the
stages.
The five stages? It's great. I have it marked here. Yeah.
The five stages of I broke a chair in front of people. And, like, I wrote the piece about it way later, but it was very easy for me to, like, go back into that place emotionally and, like, write from it. With a little perspective, it was funny. At the time,
great
point. It was awful.
How do you, I mean, in all of the stuff that you do, how important is time? How important
is it? It's the most important. Like, people always ask, like, how do you write about things that are terrible with a sense of humor? And for my process, I hate the word process almost as much as I hate the word journey, but my process involves, like, really shoving it to the corner of my mind, and then, like, 2 weeks later, it's like, remember when you broke that chair? That was pretty funny. And so I've been lucky that, like, even the most horrible things, I can, like, find the shred of what's funny about it.
Do you have to hone that? Is that a muscle? Like, I mean, as a writer, you start to recognize that stuff?
I mean, like, so I'm super sensitive. And as a kid, I was like, you know, you look at me like you say my shirt's ugly and I'm like in tears at the desk. But I think over time, I think if people hadn't responded, if people had not responded to my work as well as they do, I might not be as good at like spinning gold out of these awful situations. But yeah, it definitely took some time. Like, I wasn't born cracking jokes. Like, it took a while.
And there's something, and I say this because I've known you for a long time and I've known your work, that you can feel the evolution in the way that there's humor, and that's going to be where you're going to go.
Yeah.
But the stories about being a kid, about your mom, about your dad.
Yeah.
You can feel the jokes kind of wash away a little bit, and a little bit of the real kind of come out.
That stuff is really the hardest for me. One, because my knee-jerk reaction is just to laugh it off, like just to say, oh, you know, that's not that bad. So it's really hard for me to tap into sort of the sensitive, serious places. And also, I don't want to bum anybody out ever. Like, I always say that, like, I want my writing to be useful. And what I mean by useful is if it made you spit out your Coke and like brightened your day and made you happy, then that's awesome. And sometimes I don't feel like the sad stuff is as immediately useful, but I do get feedback from people who are like, you know, my dad was an alcoholic. Thanks for writing about your alcoholic dad. Like, there's always like someone somewhere
Absolutely.
Who is helped by even the
sad
stuff.
And even beyond help. You know, the writing about your alcoholic dad or your mom and her health problems, or even your life and your struggles with health and mm-hmm. mental health.
Yeah.
It stays with you. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it stays with me as a reader. It may not help me in a form that I'm like dealing with the same issues you may have to deal mm-hmm. with, but I recognize that, you know, through the humor, you'll get me for spitting out a Coke in the moment. But some of the stories that are real about you stay days on end.
Yeah. I think the humor a lot of times is a good gateway for people who wouldn't ordinarily read my stuff to connect with it. I got an email today from a rejected Bachelor contestant, like some guy who's on season 5 wrote me an email because I put in my Bachelorette application that I had written years ago. And so like that guy is probably not Samantha Irby reader, but he was like, I'm excited to read the rest of the book. And you know, this dude who's probably, I mean, those guys are always what, you know, like market analysts or whatever, you know, some
real estate developers.
Yeah.
Commercial real estate guy.
Yeah. White guy with super gelled hair. That's what his thing said under his name. Like, that dude probably wouldn't ordinarily read a book about a black woman with depression. But he's going to learn from that. He's going to, like, maybe see some threads that connect us.
You know, I think about the connection to you, you know, because I think that's what it's about. I mean, mm-hmm. you are the character that we're following.
Mm-hmm.
And you think of some of the great books of our time, if even fiction, where we're following Harry Potter or other people. I mean, mm-hmm. we're following you, Samantha Irby.
Well, these essays. I had some magical powers.
I know, right? You do. But the idea with Meaty and with this book, You start to recognize that I'm less interested in you making me laugh at every turn, and I'm more interested in where my favorite character is going.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that. Talk about the idea of writing your own character and having a following like your that continues to grow even bigger, who are following your sort of exploits, your follies, your life.
Well, it's amazing that people pay attention and like want to see what I'm doing. And, like, I, in turn, want to, like, live, this is going to sound trite, but, you know, I don't mean it this way. I want to live the kind of life that's interesting to people, which means to me, like, doing every dumb thing I possibly can that's, like, you know, not reckless, but so that I can write about it, or doing things I might otherwise not do so that I can write about mm-hmm. it. Like, it's amazing that anyone cares about, like, what I do and what I think about what I do. But it also is a little weird because when you meet people, they have an idea of who you are. And, like, sometimes I'm not exactly what they think they're getting. I mean, that's part of the reason I started writing about being depressed and sort of like being an anxious person who's always thinking a thousand terrible things at once, because I meet a lot of people who are like expecting a joke robot, and it is my default to like make people laugh, to make them comfortable, but it's all, it also doesn't give me a lot of room to like be normal. And so with this book, I feel like they're getting a lot of the jokes, but also a lot of like, you know, if you see me on the street and I'm weird to you, it's probably because I'm worried that you see that I'm wearing Crocs or something.
Well, you're developing your character. And that's what I think is really interesting about your work and your life, is that your character has to develop. Mm-hmm. And we learn more and more intimate details about you, and we want more and more and more. Mm-hmm. And I guess I go right back to the beginning about the idea of how intimate you're comfortable with being, because the character at some point or another will continue to evolve.
Yeah, at this point, I can't, like, shut it down, right? At this point, I can't be like, well, okay, you've been with me since 2009, no more. No, it's like everyone in my life knows now that you're part of the thing. And if you wanna, like, I got married a year ago, and I was like, if you gotta know that people are gonna wanna know, and I am going to make fun of you relentlessly for my audience.
Yeah, instead of signing a prenup, you have to sign a contract.
Yeah.
Like, you will be a character in my life and my
life. I was like, people are going to know about you, homie. So think about that before you put your name on the dotted line. So I think it's a lot of fun, and hopefully like people like have fun with me. Like, that's all I ultimately want to do, is like have a place, either like you have my book with you, or you're reading my blog and like have a place where you're like, for the however many minutes, I like a poop length kind of essay, so you can sit down and then get up and then come back to it, in case you couldn't figure out what that meant.
Yeah, thank you for the explanation, Jay Leno. Right.
But just like for that little bit of time that you're like, this is a like fun thing. This is a nice person. This is a person I care about talking about a thing that I'm interested in.
Samantha Irby is the author of We Are Never Meeting in Real Life essays. She is going to be at the Printers Row Lit Fest this weekend, tomorrow morning, sold out show. No big deal. Samantha, of course.
The tickets were free, though. Don't give me too much credit.
Long time Chicagoan who just left, but she's back for the festival. We'll talk. We'll continue the conversation with her after tonight's news. We'll take a break. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN. Coming up a little bit later in the show, Mark Bowden's going to be here. He's the author of Black Hawk Down. He also just wrote the book Hue, 1968, A Turning Point of the American War in Vietnam. This is if you get a chance, Samantha, you should go after yours, go see him talk. This book is crazy. It's so good. It's so good.
Am I smart enough to understand?
It's a battle in Vietnam during the Tet Offensive, and he does what no other historian's ever been able to do, which is the accounts are from the ground up. So what he does is it's soldiers and the letters they wrote back to their loved ones, new interviews, and then he goes to North Vietnam, or Vietnam now, and finds soldiers who are on that side, and he interviews them and their experience in the war.
Whoa.
So it's kind of cool, because now Vietnam's a different place, so you know, you can
I'll
get those interviews.
Him.
Yeah. I don't know what time he's on, but
we'll figure it out. We have people for this.
Samantha Irby is my guest right now. She is the author of We Are Never Meeting in Real Life, a collection of essays. This is her highly anticipated follow-up to her debut essays, collection of essays, Meaty. It debuted at the number 7 on the New York Times bestsellers list.
That's still
How does that feel to you? I mean, you had a lot of success in the last couple of years, mm-hmm. and I've known. I mean, I'm a champion of you at all turn. That's pretty damn impressive to show up on that list. What's that mean to you?
A lot. So they don't tell you exactly like the algorithm or the numbers, the rubric that decides who makes it. Which is good, because then I would just obsess over that and whether or not it could have been more. But everyone called the agent and the editor, and everybody was like freaking out. It's pretty amazing. I can't, I mean, I really can't believe it. And that's not like some false humility. Like, I really am just like, people bought this, huh? Like, I can't believe it.
How are you with the success?
Still poor.
Really?
So, no, I mean, yes, you don't make money. Like, you don't make money doing this. You don't make money writing books, unless you're like Stephen King or something, right?
Right.
So it's good. Like, it makes me feel like a good person, right? And makes me feel like I've done some good in the world, which is a really good feeling. Like, I put out a thing that people like. And I also know that I am never more than like 10 minutes away from trying to get a job at Walgreens or whatever, you know, because I mean, this kind of stuff is like it's like monopoly money or fun money. It's like an imaginary thing that's like really great.
Well, I mean, your life and when you were in Chicago, I mean, you were for a long time, you worked at the vet.
Yeah.
Right. And
14 years.
And I remember that. I remember because I could never get you to do anything because you'd always be like, I got to work.
Yeah. I used to work like 50 hours a week.
Yeah.
I did not believe in being an artist. I still kind of, I am real scared to, like, I don't call myself a writer. I say,
really?
I don't have a job right now, but I do like kind of write on the side.
See, that's what I was going to ask you about. I mean, at the time when you were I guess a quote unquote struggling artist in the way that you were working at the vet and doing shows at night and writing mm-hmm. the blog, you know, there was an idea that you had a dual life.
Yeah.
And now you are an author.
Yeah.
You are a writer. You are, this is what
yeah,
you do.
It's my only job right
what,
now.
I mean, as you get more and more success and more notoriety for the work, what are some of the fears and anxieties that come with that?
Well, I mean, I come from working people, so it does not feel natural to me to not have a clock to punch every day. I don't know that I, like, the last time I came to town, I came here to do a show or something, and I went and worked a shift at the vet just because.
You did?
Yes.
Just picked up some hours?
Yeah. I told them they're not allowed to, like, take me off the books. I still just don't trust. Like, I don't have a safety net, right? And it doesn't, like, unless you're like writing something all the time, unless you're like writing for a newspaper or writing something
like
every day
right,
where
right.
you're like constantly getting money, like this kind of stuff is few and far between. And I don't really do like paid speaking gigs or anything that pays you regularly. So it's a lot of like sitting and writing and being like, man, I really should find a part-time job somewhere. And I might. I mean, I might. I do not like the uncertainty that comes with
now,
being an artist.
At a certain point, I mean, is that about the anxiety of the uncertainty of being an artist, or is it a reality that you need money? I mean, that's
it's both.
Yeah.
Both. I just don't. I never believe that anything is going to work all the way out, especially if it's not something that I am like physically doing every day. Like going to work every day, I'm like, yep, I'm here, I'm doing a job, and at the end of this shift, there's going to be a direct deposit.
Yeah, right.
And with this stuff, it's like, okay, I'm writing about my feelings and I'm trying to write things to make people laugh. And then maybe people will buy it. And then maybe I'll get some money from that. And that's a crazy feeling.
The preface of this questioning was about you're on the bestseller list right now.
Yeah.
I mean, the contrast, the strange dichotomy of artists who have success and also the reality of being an artist.
Yeah.
I mean, we rarely hear anything about that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you don't have to feel bad for me. Like, this was a choice that I...
I personally feel bad for you.
Good.
No.
You should. I mean, this was a choice that I could make. Like, I'm lucky enough to be able to do it. But, like, I grew up super poor, and I don't think you ever lose the, like, I was poor. Like, I, you know, when I was in high school, I lived out of my car for a little while. Or when I graduated high school, I lived out of my car. And, like, you never forget. I never will ever forget, like, renting a motel, like, an hourly motel room so I could, like, take a shower and a nap. And so, one, like, when that's how you were brought up,
right,
like,
right.
your formative years, it just doesn't let you go. It just doesn't let you go. So, I mean, I might be a best-selling author who is like bagging your groceries. Because I like to get a check. I like to know that there is a check. Even if it's a tiny check, I like to know that there's one coming.
You could do a podcast while you're bagging the groceries.
I mean,
you could make a whole thing out of it.
I mean, it would really, you know, another thing about not having a day job is I have much less rage to fuel the writing, but also fewer things happen. And so then I have to go out like looking for experience.
Well, I mean, we've had authors on the show and a lot of people who have subscribed to the idea that, okay, you have to live a life before you can write your stuff down.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's an old adage that you get even out of writing school, right? Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, go live your life. Go around the world. And then when you're 30, you'll be able to have all these experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Do you subscribe to that concept as a writer, or are you the kind of person who can write about what you had for lunch yesterday and make it funny?
Yeah, I don't. If I had to like travel the world before I could write, I would not write because I have not been around the world. That's not realistic for people. Like packing a backpack and like going to Europe is not going to happen for a lot of broke people, but I can write about, like, you know, I mean, I don't know if my lunch would be funny, but maybe like the person next to me did something that made my lunch horrible, and I could definitely write about that and make it funny.
A lot of this book, you know, it talks about your previous life, and it talks about, you know, your pet, which is a great chapter about your freaky cat.
I know.
But a lot of it is, you know, and a lot of your work has been around your love life.
Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff that has really, really catapulted you is stories about your ex-boyfriends and sexual escapades that people are like, I can't believe she's up there talking about this, right?
I know.
That has been, I mean, I spit my Coke up on you falling in a chair today. I have spit up beer and everything else.
You're going to keep talking about that, huh? Going to keep bringing that up?
That's
the part that really stuck with you.
A lot of spit takes around your love life. In the last couple years here, and I don't know what the dates are, but you settled down.
Yeah.
And you settled down with a woman.
Yeah.
And it's something that is new to you. And as I know from reading the book, whole
experience. I had to learn how to do all the stuff for a lady. It didn't just come naturally to me. I was very arrogant and thought, well, I have these parts. Can't be that hard. But it was hard. It was hard.
For you.
But I asked a lot of questions.
Okay, good. Good. That's good to know. But for you, I mean, talk about
that. Kids listening. There's some kids
standing
outside.
You're okay. We're in the right zone.
Okay, good.
My question is about, you know, how you guys met and the decision in your life to go to a same-sex relationship that you really hadn't, up to that point, had much experience with or any interest in.
Well, so this is going to be like the least romantic courtship to marriage story you've ever heard in your life. She tweeted me about my book, and I like just responded like, oh, thanks. Glad you like it. You know, something. And she kept tweeting me back, and I don't like to tweet. So I finally was just like, do you want to like call me? So we just started talking, and I was like, you know, I don't have a lot of patience. So I finally was like, what are we doing? Do you want to like go have dinner or something? And we went to brunch and she ate more food than any person I've ever met in my life. And I was like, sold. And then like the getting married part. So for a long time, I like waited for like the butterfly feeling to turn into like a some passionate love affair that then turned into like a beautiful home, and none of that happened for me. So this lady kept tweeting at me, then we ate a few meals together, and she was like, I'll work while you write jokes about me and hope to make money doing those. And I was like, let's get married tomorrow. What is your benefits package looking like? I got a lot of prescriptions that are expensive. And yeah, all I had to do was move to small town Michigan. It's perfect.
I mean, again, and it's the chapters are really funny.
Thank you.
But I mean, the emotional part.
I mean, one day she's going to murder me in my sleep.
I guess that's the thing. Like we talked about a little bit earlier about the idea of time. And as it kind of gets away, like I'm looking forward to The moment in which, in the next book, when the character of Samantha Irby starts to give us her real feelings about love.
Oh, I've already started. Marriage is hard. It's not hard for, like, the reasons people always say it's hard. Like, I've never lived with anyone before, and getting to know people's live together, like, the habits is real tough for me. Okay, this is my story. This is, I think, appropriate.
I'm glad you're the editor on what's appropriate. That's good. So, that's rich.
So she is one of those people who, if you have a glass of water and you step away for a minute to, like, get the mail or something, like, the water glass is gone. It's washed. It's dried. It's put away by the time you come back to the table. And, like, I can't complain about that because it is a very nice thing to have people pick up your water glass.
Right.
But, I mean, that kind of stuff. I don't know where anything I own is. Like, everything's put away.
You want the freedom to put away your own water glass.
I want the freedom to leave my water glass there for 6 days until I decide I'm going to wash it.
Oh, my. You're such a dude.
But, like, if that's the worst thing. Yeah.
You're such a dude. I mean, come on. That's
right. Like, I like to wear flowers and stuff. But really, I was like, man, I'm really, like, a sitcom dad in this house. Like, I just, like, oh, I don't touch my stuff. You know, it's it's rough. It's rough.
What does it feel like to be back in town for you? You spent a lot of time here, and you developed such a following, and Chicago loves. People are texting in. I mean, they love when you are back in town. What does it feel like for you to come back into Chicago?
Good. I miss it so much, but you do get used to being in a small town. You do get used to not having this many people everywhere all the time, and, like, there are people. There's people bumping into you all the time. I'm staying downtown, and, like, everywhere there is just someone running into you. I'm like, I love it because this is my city, but I'm also like, man, I have grown acclimated to the, like, small town life more than I thought I would.
You know,
I've been gone for a year, and, like, people bump me on the sidewalk, and I'm like, is he gonna cut me? You know, it's so stupid.
For you, the concept of spending your formidable years here in Chicago, where you're up on stage or you're writing the blog or even your debut essays, Meaty, what did Chicago mean to you? What was it about this town that helped shape how you write and who you are?
Well, I hate to call it a scene, but the lit scene here is, like, unreal. There are so many. I know everybody's, like, into the comedy and improv, but the live lit scene is amazing. And there are so many super talented people doing, like, such good work for free. And, like, often it's everywhere. And I would not have a book if I hadn't been performing, because I met the people who published the first book through performing. And, like, I don't think I could have done that anywhere else. There's not really a forum anywhere else for people who, like, who read things off 3 sheets of paper in front of an audience.
Right.
People are always like, you want to come to my open mic? And I'm like, yeah, can I bring a 6,000 word essay? You know, there's no other place that you can do. Like, there's no other place that I could have done that. Also, like, everyone I know is here. And, like, I've met a lot of good people here. And, I mean, people who know that I'm from Evanston are going to get mad that we keep talking about Chicago because Chicagoans get real tight about that. But I did all of my work in Chicago.
You did.
So, yeah, I miss it. I miss being here.
Well, we miss you.
Not
a little
you.
Bit.
You
not me.
Don't.
Not me as much. I say we as in the royal we. Just a lot
I
of
really
people.
Hate you. This is a bad idea.
This is a really bad
I'm gonna
idea.
I'm going to sell. People are going to take their books back after hearing me on
They're
your
like,
show.
Oh, why? Why? the book is We Are Never Meeting in Real Life, a collection of essays. Samantha Irby will be at the Printers Row Lit Fest tomorrow morning. Sold out.
Yeah.
See, another testament to the love that the city gives back to you.
The tickets were free.
Still, it's a Saturday morning.
I guess
morning.
You had to click a thing. Yeah, it's a Saturday morning. People are going to get up and it's going to be the most respect. Hungover.
Have some respect for the people who bought your tickets.
Thank you, who clicked the free ticket link.
There you go. Samantha Irby, good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Good to see you, Justin.